So R2 is a discovery in 2025. We've released 14 holes so far. Every hole has hit. We are ramping up our exploration program right now as we have a better understanding. And we've delineated a zone that's about 300 vertical meters by about 150 meters horizontally, multiple high grade copper precious metal veins. And when I say high grade, some of these are just unbelievably spectacular. Where we're talking, one of our recent results was 3.4 meters at 29% copper equivalent.
Good day, everybody. It's me, Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. I have with me founder, CEO, and director of Magnum Mining, Jason Jessup. Jason, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great today, Steve.
Jason, first of all, congratulations on the TSX. If you can give our listeners where you're trading, what your website is, and if you can, love to start there.
Yeah, sure. So we have recently uplisted to the TSX from the TSX Venture, and our trading symbol is NICU, Nickel Copper. And we also trade on the OTCQX under MGNF.
Jason, first of all, I saw you earlier this month at the Rick Rule Symposium. It was quite the turnout. How did you enjoy the conference, and what was your biggest takeaway, and what kind of impact can an event like that have for a company like Magna?
Yeah, so that's our third year attending the symposium, and it was a fantastic event. Always enjoy it. This year, even more than last year, really had a great turnout. So as you remember, it was packed, a lot of really good investors asking really good questions. So it gives us an opportunity to reach out to a different group of investors. And it's nice to see so many, I would say, generalist investors, retail investors that are looking to learn more about the metals and mining space and learn how to properly invest in it. So that was great. It was good to talk with, probably over 100 investors that came by our booth, and we had good conversations on Magna. So really enjoyed it and looking forward to next year.
Jason, for those who are not familiar with the Magna Mining story, could you tell us what that is and, where are your assets and what is your focus?
So we are focused on one jurisdiction and one jurisdiction only, and that is the Sudbury region of Ontario, Canada. I've been living in Sudbury for 26 years, and I came here for mining, and I worked for one of the major mining companies here. And Sudbury has been operating for 140 years continuously. It has been, for most of that time, been dominated just by two companies. It was originally Inco and Falconbridge. Now it's the international companies of Vale and Glencore. And then Magna is the only other producing mining company here in Sudbury. So a big, big jurisdiction with, a lot of history in mining. Right now it has six operating mines, two large mills, one operated by Glencore, one by Vale, and two nickel smelters and a nickel refinery. So it's a great city, about 190,000 people. When I moved here, I was working in mining operations for Inco, and in 2005, I picked up my coveralls and moved down the road to this junior startup called FNX Mining. And FNX acquired five past producing mines from Inco in 2003, had restarted the McCreedy West mine. So I joined, it was operating. And then over the next 5 years, we were able to make some discoveries, bring two more mines into commercial production, and were merged in 2010 for $1.8 billion valuation. So it was a great experience. I ended up moving on at that time, or just shortly after that merger, and went on to do some other things and wanted to kind of recreate that entrepreneurial spirit that we had at FNX. And in 2016, I founded Magna to come back to Sudbury. And in 2012, those FNX assets were acquired by a Polish mining company, KGHM. And my goal was to buy those assets back from KGHM, which I deemed them to be non-core to that company. And we were successful in doing that in 2025. So we founded the company in 2016, 2017, made our first acquisition as a private company, went public in 2021, made our second acquisition of Crean Hill in 2022, and in 2025 closed the acquisition of the KGHM assets, including the producing McCreedy West mine, which we currently own, as well as the Levack mine, the Podolsky mine, and five other exploration properties. So big package here in Sudbury now. We have one producing mine, four fully permitted past producing mines in Sudbury, and over 500 square kilometers of prospective properties, and some of them also past producers that we are exploring.
Jason, before we get into the updates on each project, if you can, first of all, I just want to congratulate you again on the TSX listing. Last time we spoke, I think you were still on the venture, but now you're on the TSX. What new opportunities does this open up for you guys?
Well, it definitely opens us up to some new investors, and particularly the ETFs and the indices and the passive funds. So being on the big board now will, I think, improve our liquidity, which is really important. And with improved liquidity, again, it attracts other new investors, especially now that we're, gaining in size and we're over half a billion-dollar market cap.
So you are growing quite a bit. I know you guys got quite the team there as well. I think you guys, a lot of you guys have pre-existing relationships and have worked with each other for a while. So you got that built up. You got the McCreedy West. If you can walk us through the McCreedy asset itself, if you can, tell us the if you have any advantages of being in Sudbury and being how familiar you are with there, and then the infrastructure that's around, and just kind of the how it plays an important foundation for your company's growth.
Yeah, the McCreedy West mine is a great mine. It is a it's a smaller mine, but has been running for a long time. Inco operated it from about mid 1970s till about 1997. Produced about 15 million tons of ore from underground. Good, very good grade ore. It went on care and maintenance. FNX restarted in 2003 with 3 years of reserves, and 23 years later, it's been running continuously and still has 3 years of reserves. That's just kind of how this mine operates. So good, good solid producer. Has two different types of mineralization, really three deposits, but it has our contact nickel zone, which is called the Intermain nickel. Currently we're not mining it, but it has been mined in 2025. We did some mining in it. Right now we're focused on our 700 copper zone and our PM zone. And this is a different type of deposit. I would say it's relatively common in Sudbury, but only been exploited for about the last 35 years. And it is a more copper dominated, PGM dominated type system. That is where we're making the best margins at McCreedy West. That is our focus right now. We do have that optionality when we see, nickel start spiking, and nickel will spike again, that we can turn on the nickel very quickly. What makes our business model really unique, and this really lends to, the benefits of being in Sudbury, is what I said earlier. There are two large mills in Sudbury, very large mills that have excess capacity. And our business model is to mine the ore and sell it to either Vale's Clarabelle Mill or Glencore's Strathcona Mill. And that allows us to ramp up very quickly, adjust our plan, be flexible on commodities. If we, believe in and see copper as being, the strongest commodity, we can focus on copper. We can, pivot and bring in nickel when time's appropriate. And we can also pivot towards more lower sulfide, higher precious metals type ores. And Sudbury has all three of these. It's a truly polymetallic camp. And all of the ores have a combination of seven payable metals, which is copper, nickel, cobalt, platinum, palladium, gold, and silver. Just depending on where you are, they have different ratios. So you can really focus on that. And that's the huge advantage of our business model, is we can ramp up quickly, very cost effectively, and use the existing infrastructure as opposed to investing capital to build our own mills, put out the permits for more tailings facilities, and then have those liabilities going forward. We can simply pay one fee to mill our ore. We get paid for the metal, and we can keep mining and exploring and doing what we do best.
You mentioned having your own mill. If you can expound a little bit more on the advantages of that, what that gives you, and why that makes sense. If it's just the margins, is it something more than that?
Yeah, having your own mill does give you the flexibility of being able to have cell offtakes and control where your concentrate's going. But in all reality, there's only a limited number of nickel smelters. In Canada right now, there's only two, and they're both here in Sudbury. So having our own mill in Sudbury right now with, while there is excess capacity, and I see that going forward in the future, for a long time, it doesn't give you really any huge advantage. You're going to invest a lot of capital to slightly lower your operating costs, and there'll be a payback period on that. But then you have a mill that you need to keep full all the time. As metal prices cycle and as development and production programs change, we don't have to worry about keeping a mill full or expanding mills as we grow production. So for us, having a mill is not necessary. Now we do have permits to build a mill at our Shakespeare project here in Sudbury. So it is an option in the future, but it's not something we're considering anytime soon.
Jason, last time we spoke, you had just announced a strategic investment deal. I believe it's with Alpayana. What's the timeline on that? Who are they? And why were they the right partners for you guys at this time?
Yeah, so we're really excited about this strategic investment. Alpayana is a private Peruvian mining company run by the Gubbins family. They operate five mines underground in Peru and one operating mine in Mexico. They've been very successful in operating for about 40 years. So we have met them through a existing investor. I've had communication with them for almost a year, and they came up for a site visit in June, and we thought, potentially at some point they may want to make an investment. We were not at that time really considering a 19.9% stake in our company. We were thinking something probably below 9.9. But as we got to know each other over the course of a couple days, and really see the sites and talk about all the similarities within the core values and the culture between our two companies, we just saw a lot of good fit and good synergies. And when we, presented sort of an opportunity saying, if we are going to do a financing at some point, would you like to, be considered to participate? They came back to us with, we would like to be a 19.9% shareholder. We would like to help Magna grow. We see a lot of growth opportunity here, and we think we could be helpful, and we agreed. So, we spent a bit of time doing some due diligence on each other further, and came to a term sheet fairly quickly. So we're really excited about it. It's going to give us the cash, the $140 million for 19.9% of our company. It's going to give us all the cash we need to not only bring our Levack mine into commercial production as our second mine to hit commercial production, but also our Crean Hill mine simultaneously. So we'll be able to bring both those mines into commercial production over the next couple of years, along with McCreedy West, and that will put us in a very strong position. And we think our studies will be coming out later this quarter on Crean Hill and Levack, and it'll speak to sort of the quantum and the size of production we can get out of those mines. But we're really excited to have that funding so we can move both forward as quickly as we can.
Jason, you mentioned Levack. I'd love to talk about it. You think you've got an upcoming PEA, if I'm not mistaken. And then there's the R2, which is, possible upside, which could add another dimension to the story. How should investors think about the opportunity and upside here? What is the path to bringing Levack into production?
So Levack is a mine that has operated for over 100 years. It went on care and maintenance in 2019 under KGHM. And when we acquired it, it was in that care and maintenance state. But it was used as secondary egress for a neighboring Glencore mine. So they would have access through our shaft if for some reason they couldn't move people through their shaft. And because of that, because they were paying for that right to have that in place, the mine was kept in very good shape. So people were going underground every day, and the shaft was all inspected, and ventilation and ground control work was being done. So we took over a mine that was in a very good condition, and it was stopped mining in 2019 because essentially KGHM did not want to invest more capital into the mine. It just was so non-core to them at that time. So what we've done now is we have ramped up crews, we have got diamond drills underground. We have one development crew per shift, drilling and blasting, doing exploration development, developing a drift towards our R2 zone, this high-grade copper footwall discovery we made last year, which is really exciting. But as well as we're diamond drilling some other areas of the contact nickel mineralization that still remains. So between indicated and inferred resources in total, between our contact nickel copper zones and our copper PGM footwall zones, there is over 11 million tons of resources at the Levack mine now, and that does not include R2. So R2 is a discovery in 2025. We've released 14 holes so far. Every hole has hit. We are ramping up our exploration program right now as we have a better understanding. And we've delineated a zone that's about 300 vertical meters by about 150 meters horizontally, multiple high grade copper precious metal veins. And when I say high grade, some of these are just unbelievably spectacular. Where we're talking, one of our recent results was 3.4 meters at 29% copper equivalent. And if you put that in context, at McCreedy West, right now we're mining, and in Q1, we had a mine profit at the mine, but we're mining at about 3.2 to 3.5% copper equivalent. So spectacular grades as R2. Again, we've mined with FNX these high-grade type deposits, and at the Levack mine, when I was there during the FNX tenure, we mined out of the Morrison deposit 10% copper, 10 grams of precious metals, and 1.5 to 2% nickel month after month after month. Extremely high grades, and if you plug in spot prices into those kinds of grades, you can just imagine the in-situ value of that metal, of that rock. So we are really excited about R2. It's a huge upside for the project, but it will not be included in the PEA that will be completed this quarter. So it is upside, and analysts are starting to understand what that potential can be. But I think we are going to have a very robust plan without R2. And when you tack on R2, I think Levack will be an extremely exciting mine and a lot of growth for our company.
Is that something like that, where a discovery like R2 isn't part of the PEA? Is that something that could potentially re-rate things?
I believe so. So one of our plans is that, as I mentioned, we are driving a drift out to R2 right now. The R2 zone is about 600 meters from our Morrison deposit, which is another footwall high-grade copper zone that FNX discovered and KGHM mined up until 2019. So we're driving a drift now across. We're probably about 300 meters away from R2 right now. We are going to drive it a little bit further, and then we're going to stop the drift. We're going to put a diamond drill in, and we're going to diamond drill. And that diamond drill will probably continue definition drilling at R2 for, I would imagine, a lot of 2027. It will give us the information to properly model these veins. But at some point, what we're going to do is we're going to continue that drift on, and we are going to intersect the R2 zone. And this could happen as early as Q1 of 2027. And then we will start following these high-grade veins. It will vary from 30 centimeters or 1 foot out to, potentially as wide as 3 meters or more. And follow these veins. And as we are mining these veins, we're going to be understanding, the orientation. We'll be able to better model and build a better resource. And also we'll be able to ship that mined material out to Vale's mill or Glencore's mill and start receiving revenue from that. And that could happen very quickly. So we're really excited about R2. And I think once people understand what it is, I do see it could be a potential re-rating for our company.
Jason, you are you're a producing you're a company that's producing. You've got several projects, and then my understanding is that you talked about Crean Hill and Levack are essentially it seems to be parallel projects. They seem to be running parallel at least in timeline. If you can nuance that, if that's not accurate, but if you can help me understand the strategy behind doing that together at the same time as opposed to stacking it, what made sense to do that, and why is Crean Hill such an exciting opportunity for you guys?
So Crean Hill was a mine that we acquired in 2022. It was another past producing Inco mine, operated for about 80 years underground, produced about 20 million tons of ore. It was put on care and maintenance and then closed back in 2002. We acquired it, and there was about 90,000 meters of drilling that had been done prior to us acquiring it, but post the mine closing. So we took all this information, put it together with the historic drilling, and were able to come up with a significant resource of about 18 million tons of a very good underground mineralization, underground resource. Then we completed a PEA in 2024 using this resource that estimated a 13-year mine life with peak production at 2,200 tons per day, very high IRR and very low capital costs. So the capital costs in the PEA to get this mine started were about approximately $70 million Canadian. But when you net off pre-production revenues, because as we start developing, we can start shipping ore off to Vale, which we have an ore selling agreement in place already, we can start generating revenues and offsetting some of those costs. So when you look at all of that, it was a very attractive project in 2024 based on this PEA. And that PEA was using much lower metal prices than we have today. So the PFS that we're completing right now, that will be done in September, it will use more realistic consensus metal prices for 2026. And when we plug those into our internal models, back in 2025, we got quite excited looking at the potential of cash flows from Crean Hill. So that is why we wanted to expedite it. Our original plan when we acquired these properties back in the KGHM properties in 2025 was to get McCreedy West running well, which we did in 2025, so we could start generating some cash that we could reinvest. The next mine would be Levack mine that we'd want to move forward, and we have cash flow coming from McCreedy West and Levack to reinvest that in to start Crean Hill, a bootstrap type approach. But looking at the potential economics at sort of current prices, Crean Hill looks so attractive, we wanted to shorten that timeline and bring some of that cash flow forward. And that's really what we're excited about. It's a simple project. It's going to be a ramp from surface to start. We're going to start mining on some shallow levels. We've actually taken a 20,000 ton surface bulk sample. So one of the mineralized high PGM copper zones comes right to surface, our 109 footwall zone. So we took a 20,000 ton bulk sample in 2024. Excellent program. Went really, really well. And but it just kind of indicates that we have shallow ore we can go after that's pretty high grade. So it will be a great project. The PFS, I think, will really outline that. And again, now with this cash from this strategic investment, we'll be able to move it forward very quickly. And I think people can expect that we will make a construction decision post our PFS this year.
Jason, I want to just briefly touch upon the financing. If you can, I don't know if you mentioned how much cash you have in hand, but if you could mention that, the number of shares, and then if you foresee the need for of raising in the near future.
So we have, as of the end of Q1, and we'll be putting out our Q2 financials on August 12th, but as of the end of Q1, we had 36 million in cash in the treasury. So we do expect when this financing closes, and we expect our financing with Alpayana to close in August, we will have enough cash in the bank that we can move forward with Levack and Crean Hill simultaneously, as well as execute our exploration plan without needing any more financing. So we do not, potentially do not need a financing ever again. Once we have Levack and Crean Hill at commercial production, along with McCreedy West, we should be, have significant cash flows, again, based on metal prices, and that's very forward-looking. But potentially, we may never need another financing again, and we would be self-sufficient to fund our growth from cash flows. Now, right now, we have 250 million shares approximately outstanding, and we will be, of course, adding additional shares for the Alpayana transaction, which will take us up to around 310 million shares in total.
Any other big institutions that are in play that are involved? Is the plan to find more? And then if you can also talk about the skin in the game that you have, as well as the ownership and insiders.
Our second largest investor after Alpiana comes in, and currently our largest investor, is Dundee Corp, led by Jonathan Goodman. And Dundee Corp has been a fantastic cornerstone shareholder for Magna since we went public in 2021. They currently own about 18.8% of the company. They will get diluted down with Alpiana coming into about 16%. So between Alpiana and Dundee, which we consider two excellent cornerstone shareholders now, they will have about 36% ownership in the company. So myself, I own 10.6 million shares. So it will be a fairly tight float. We are always looking for new institutional investors to come in. And of course, now buying in the market, they will not be able to participate in the financings. We do not plan to do any more financings. So it will be getting out marketing to new institutional investors, and then they'll have to be buying in the market.
Jason, we first met, I think, 2 years ago, and you've accomplished so much in the last year, it seems like. And today we talked about the TSX, McCreedy West, Alpiana, Levesque, Cray and Hill. And how are these pieces coming together to shape Magna, and what do you think this company can ultimately become?
Yeah, I'm always thinking out 5, 10 years out in front of us and how we're going to get to where I envision we can get. But we have a great team right now that's executing. So, it was so important in 2025 for us to get McCreedy West turned around. It was an undercapitalized, struggling mine that was losing money under its previous owners. We invested some capital, focused on development, focused on getting the right people in the right place. And turn that mine around. So that was a big part of it. And we have a great team that did that. Now our next legs of growth, as you said, will be bringing Levesque and Crane Hill into production to generate that cash flow that we will need going forward. And we do have two other mines, Podolsky and Shakespeare, which are fully permitted past producing mines. Shakespeare, we acquired in 2017, open pit. Now it's a little larger capital cost because we would build a mill for that and put the mill right beside the open pit. That would be the most efficient way to mine it and the best returns. And we also have our Podolsky mine, which operated under KGHM up until 2014. So both those mines could be in our pipeline within the next 5 years and potentially be restarted through cash flows from McCreedy West, Levesque, and Crane Hill. But I'm also looking at, again, beyond that, further down the road, how do we continue to build out that pipeline so we can continue to grow? And 10 years from now, we still have a lot of growth in front of us. And that's going to come from two separate mechanisms. One will be exploration and making new discoveries like R2. So, as I mentioned, we have a big land package over 500 square kilometers. Some of it has historic deposits on it, some were mined historically, such as our Kirkwood mine, which was a historic Inco mine. We haven't drilled it yet since acquiring it from KGHM. We see great potential. So that's a mine that potentially we can make a discovery on our property and bring into production in the future. So exploration will become very important regionally for us, so we can continue to grow. Now that we've discovered R2, let's find the next one. And then the other way we're going to grow long term is through acquiring more non-core assets here in Sudbury. So we have a great relationship with the two major mining companies here. They need feed. They know we're a reliable supplier of ore to their mills, and they have non-core assets that they're not developing. So there's definitely a synergistic relationship there where we can work together. We can make accretive acquisitions that are really a win-win for both parties. So exploration and M&A is going to continue to be a big driving force in our growth going forward.
For our listeners, Jason, I want to disclose that I am currently not an investor, and Jason and Magna Mining have not paid for this interview. I am not giving investment advice, so please do your due diligence. And one of the ways you can do that is to reach out to Jason, to check out their website, to follow their ticker and their story. Jason, what's the best way to do that? One more time, if you can give us the best way to follow you, reach out, and how they can invest.
Yeah, so our website is www.magnamining.com, and they can reach out, directly to me at jason.jessup@magnamining.com, or through our website at info@magnamining.com. And yeah, and definitely follow us through socials. We're on social media, all the main channels, and we get a lot of messages inbound from that as well, and we do our best to respond to all of them.
Awesome. Well, Jason, good to see you again. Thanks for talking about Magna Mining once more, and continue to follow your story. And thanks for being here.
Well, it was a pleasure, Steve. Thanks again.